I'm Celeste Headlee. This is On Second Thought. Tomorrow, we'll talk about race relations in the United States. Police shootings get a lot of headlines, but Professor Mark Lamont Hill says we have to broaden the scope if we plan to solve inequalities. He'll join us tomorrow to talk about his new book, Nobody, Casualties of America's War on the Vulnerable, from Ferguson to Flint and beyond. So what do you think is at the root of our racial tensions here in the States? Is there a root cause? Call us at 404-500-9457 to be part of that discussion, and then be sure to join us tomorrow morning for more. Savannah is known as one of America's most haunted cities, so it fits that the Savannah Voice Festival would commission an opera about ghosts. Composer Michael Ching wrote Alice Riley about the first woman hanged in Georgia. And if you believe in ghosts, legend has it she continues to haunt Wright Square in Savannah, where she was killed. The Ghost Opera will return to the Savannah Voice Festival stage tomorrow at the Westin Savannah Harbor Ballroom. I spoke with composer Michael Ching last year when the opera first opened. Baritone James Wright also joined that conversation. He plays the character of Richard White, Alice Riley's lover. I started the conversation by asking Michael how much he feels the need to stick with historical facts when he's telling the story.
Actually, because it is so long ago and because there's only a certain amount known about this case, there is a lot of leeway.
Yeah.
For example, Alice got thrown out of her first posting when she was indentured. The first place that they sent her, she got removed from, but we don't know why. And so I make up the idea that she was praying in Gaelic and her master did not approve.
Because she came from Ireland and she's kind of a fiery redhead. But you made the choice to have two separate Alice Rileys in the opera. What was the thought behind that?
Well, the producer, Maria Zuvas, really wanted me to try to tell the story from multiple perspectives. And so the idea was to have an Alice that was just getting off the boat and experiencing it, and another Alice, slightly older, who's in jail, been condemned to die, and is recalling it. And there's actually one moment in the show where I managed to get them to sing together at the same time, which seemed appropriate for a ghostly opera.
Okay, so James, tell me a little bit about this music. I mean, it sounds, it's very lyric, and it sounds, just listening to it, like it feels good in the throat, but how would you describe the music itself?
I mean, I think you kind of hit it on the head. Every singer kind of gets nervous about getting a new score. You never know, you know, it could take years to get it down. And fortunately, Michael's stuff makes a lot of sense. It's beautiful. It does feel good. It's very singable. I've actually known Michael for about 5 years, and I'd never heard any of his music, I'm ashamed to say. So when I heard Alice for the first time, I was very impressed, and I'm very glad to be part of it.
Michael, let me bring this to you. And I, in interest of full disclosure, I'm biased on this issue. My grandfather's a composer and wrote nothing but melodies. And I liked
his music.
I wonder how you. I mean, you are highly educated. You went to a highfalutin Duke University, and I wonder how you feel about this attitude that still exists in classical music, that if it's not difficult and challenging, it's not intellectual music. Have you encountered that?
A lot. It's a horrible shame, and I guess the way I deal with it is that I would write for maybe highfalutin, difficult-sounding music if I thought that that was the particular audience I was writing for. But here in Savannah, the opera company, the Savannah Voice Festival, is very young, and the audience has a certain background in traditional opera, and then beyond that, fairly new, young audience. There's an audience beyond that that may only have references to the music that they hear in church or the musical theater piece that they've gone to see at the community theater. So I feel like you have to write for the particular audience here. And so the piece was really designed to be accessible. And if somebody somewhere thinks I'm not writing sophisticated enough music, well, that's their problem and not mine.
Well, let's let the audience in on what it is we're talking about. Let's take a listen to some of the music. This is actually the chorus singing. It's on a trolley in present-day Savannah, where they're giving a tour, and it includes a Savannah native, Johnny Mercer, who wrote the lyrics to Moon River. Let's take a listen.
You'll hear Moon. At least at first.
Okay, so this is you with a sense of humor, and I bring this up because this is another way in which you're kind of breaking some of the traditions of opera here. Michael, how much do you let your own sense of humor come through in your writing something high art like opera?
Well, believe it or not, Celeste, I'm actually best known for comic opera, and so I like things that are funny. And this particular piece is a kind of Broadway piece that starts the opera, and then it goes into a more classical operatic style. So it's kind of like in La Traviata. You know that there's the Libiamo early on. It's a great piece that you want to sing along to. And I
most
think
people know them. Libiamo, Libiamo.
Yes, that's exactly. Yes.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Beautiful.
Keep going.
So there's a piece like that early on to get the audience comfortable that they can stay and enjoy the rest of it, and then it moves into a kind of operatic style after that.
Okay, well, James, let's actually take a listen to some of your singing in here. This is one of the most dramatic scenes in the opera, and your character, James Richard White, kills your master, William Wise. You're in indentured servants, both you and Alice, and yep. He is actually insulting you while you and your lover, Alice Riley, are grooming him. He's disabled, so take a listen. Okay, so you strangle him.
And not particularly my singing, but something in there.
Right. I'm not talking about your tone. I'm talking about you actually strangling William Wise. And, you know, those kind of scenes can be really difficult for a singer because sometimes the tension in your body translates into tension in your voice. How do you overcome that?
Well, fortunately, Michael makes it so I don't have to sing while I'm killing him. I speak that line, and then after I kill him, I get two or three bars to catch my breath. And then I sing a few lines before Alice and I run away. And fortunately, I mean, that's a pretty big emotional climax. And then after that, I don't have to sing anymore. So he gave me the hard stuff at the end, and I can let it rip and take a break after that. But
it gives you that big high note, and then you can go backstage and kick back.
Yeah, and, you know, it's fun to kill somebody on stage. I've never killed anyone. I've been killed on stage, but I haven't killed
anyone. Wow, you've never killed anybody in opera? Because a lot of people die in opera. There's a lot of murder.
Yeah, and for whatever reason, you know, my voice type, I'm a more lyric baritone. I don't particularly do a lot of operas that are very intense like this. You know,
you'll grow up and kill a lot of people, Jim.
Exactly.
There are plenty of murderous baritones in opera, James.
Oh, of course.
We'll have to get you there. Let's take a little bit, another listen here, Michael. This is a lullaby, a lovely little lullaby that Alice actually sings to her baby. Here's a bit of that.
Sweet
I may be reading a lot into it, but, you know, Alice, her execution was delayed when they found out that she was pregnant. And so I listen to that and I hear some of the chords and I think, wow, some of those, the discord in those chords must be this weird situation where she's had her baby in prison. That's the only thing keeping her alive.
You're absolutely right. It's a sweet lullaby. It's an actual Irish lullaby, but it's dipped in this deep sorrow and foreboding about the fact that, now that I've had my baby, what's going to happen?
Yeah, she's going to die. That's what's going to happen. Yeah. Spoiler alert. So that's my my question for you is, how much foreshadowing do you put in terms of the fact that Alice Riley becomes a ghost? Do you deal with that musically?
Well, the ghost part of the ghost story is very deft. It is very fleeting, and as that should be, because when you're looking for a ghost, if the ghost is going to come up and shake your hand, that's not going to be very scary, is it? Well, I suppose it could be if it's a scary ghost. But the point is that it's handled very lightly, and I guess without giving it away, it's very much at the end of the opera. And it's kind of, I think, Alice is kind of like the guilty conscience of Savannah or the colony, because, you know, here she is, the first woman hanged. I think she might have been the first person hanged at all, and she was they probably shouldn't have done that. And so the fact that she's still haunting Wright Square, I think, is kind of a little bit of the guilty conscience of the culture.
That is composer Michael Ching and baritone James Wright. I spoke with them last year. The opera Alice Riley returns to the Savannah Voice Festival stage tomorrow night at 5:30 at the Westin Savannah Harbor Ballroom.